What's up, everybody? This is Jordan Rossler and Derek Ambrosen from the Dynasty Builders Podcast, part of the DLF family of podcasts.
Each week, we use film analysis, rookie breakdowns, ADP, analytic tools,
and a dose of humor
to ensure that you get actionable and practical advice from each and every episode to help you build a dynasty.
Check my inbox and what do I see? Just another day, another T-R-A-D-E. I'm an addict, and I need it in my veins. I'm an addict, otherwise I feel plain now. Every day I wake up, people got a problem. Making all these trades up, got me singing got 'em. But I've been paid up, I even started from the bottom. See, I don't wait up, I ain't even playing possum. So what it cost, I'm just a couple of firsts. Can't believe that it worked, not to say I'm a jerk. But I'm an addict, it's what I said in the first. You can curse all you want, you can pray in your church. But I'ma keep tapping return, I win up, I learn. I ain't trying to burn any bridges. I yearn for the feeling I earn. All my winnings to turn. You had a cheek before I drop you like the beat. I'm an addict, and I'm not really ashamed. I'm an addict, I'm reclining with the brain. I'm an addict, and the pot is what I'm playing. I'm an addict, Russ and Brian are the names. Trade addicts pod, let's go.
I am Rocky Petrella, and I have a trading problem.
My name is Garrett Price, and I also have a trading problem.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the session 145 of the Trade Addicts Podcast, a member of the DLF family of podcasts and a proud member of the Dynasty Addicts Podcast Network, the DAP Network, if you will, and of course we will. And as you can tell, I am not Dynasty Outhouse, but Dynasty Outhouse has a power outage problem. So he is, I don't know if he's going to show up or not. He may jump in later. But right now it's me and Garrett. I may have a co-host showing up. We'll see. But Garrett, since we have you here, let's, before we get in, we usually start off with a little interview for new guests.
Sure.
But just before that, why don't you just tell everyone who you are, where they can find you, and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I'm Garrett Price. I'm one of the co-hosts, co-owners of Dynasty Nerds. I have been playing fantasy football for, at least 15 years. I've been playing Dynasty for about 9 years now. And all of my free time, I feel like, ends up doing something on Twitter. Spending a lot of time right now scouting these rookies, looking into the 2021 class and all the stuff that goes on with that. And yeah, I don't know. Anything else you want to know?
Yeah, Garrett, the professional, getting right into the questions there. So you've been playing Dynasty for 15 years?
Playing Fantasy for 15 years, Dynasty for about 8 or 9 years.
Okay. And in the time you've been playing Dynasty, that's a pretty good track record. What are some of the best and worst trades that you've made?
Whew.
You can remember.
Yeah. So one of the worst trades I ever made was trading for Andrew Luck right before he retired. that didn't pan out well. But
do you remember what you traded for him?
Oh, it was a decent amount because it was an odd scoring league. It was one of my oldest dynasty league, and we get a half point per completion. So it kind of boosts the value of quarterbacks, even though it's one quarterback, it boosts the value of quarterbacks. So I gave my first round pick that year, which would have been like 1-9, something like that, for Andrew Luck. And obviously it didn't quite pan out. But the worst one that didn't have weird circumstances was I traded Lev Bell more or less straight up for Gronk, like right before he like had his decline. So that was pretty bad. That was about 5 years ago. So I got like one good year of Gronk, and then the rest, I think I got like a second round pick with him, but still it clearly wasn't enough. Best trade I ever made was actually probably this past year. I traded, Darius Geis, my first round pick, which would have been let's see, what did it end up being this year? 1-7. And then Jarvis Landry to get new Hopkins. So that worked out
pretty
well.
Yeah, that's definitely pretty good. And yeah, I mean, after especially what after happened with Darius Geis there. So.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I was on the opposite side of that that Luck situation there. I had traded Luck and a first for Mahomes.
Oh wow!
In the off season, yeah, that he retired. So that worked out pretty well for me.
Yeah, it
did. In a super flex league. Yeah, and and what would be your guiding principle? One guiding principle or your main focuses in when you do trade in trading? What are your guiding principles?
So for me, I am a really big, like when drafting, I'm a really big best player available guy. So when it comes to trades, I utilize trading more for lack of depth or, you know, needing a better starter or somewhere. That's more of my movement for, you know, positional lineups, that type of thing. I kind of use trades more for that. I'm not as worried. Obviously, I want to make good deals. I want to get good value and stuff like that. But I focus more on best player available with value in drafts, and I focus more on the positional need and stuff like that in trades.
So, yeah, it's the old draft for value, trade for need kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a smart move. Okay, so let's get that finished up the interview. So let's get right into the news here. And obviously there was a big news item over the weekend that I think every podcast pretty much needs to talk about at this point.
Yeah.
Which was Jared Goff getting traded along with the 2 firsts and a 3rd to the Lions for Matthew Stafford.
Yep.
So what are your thoughts on Stafford, the Ram? And does this boost anybody in particular on the Rams, do you think? Obviously, I think it's good for Stafford, but what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good for the entire offense. I don't know that there's a player that I would say doesn't benefit from getting a superior quarterback. We know he's a guy that is more than happy to use the tight end. Gerald Everett's going to more than likely be gone in the offseason, so that's a boost for Tyler Higbee. I think he has a much stronger arm than Jared Goff, so some of those big plays downfield to a guy like Robert Woods. I think Robert Woods would probably be the one I would single out as maybe the biggest beneficiary. But we know Robert Woods can be used, you know, low A-dot routes or down. He can do it all. He's a very, very talented receiver. And I think it obviously helps Kupp too, but I think it helps Cam Akers a little bit as well. I think there's a little bit less stress on a guy like Cam Akers to have to really carry the offense. And, you know, Matthew Stafford has been in the league for a while and can run that offense very well and probably much better than Jared Goff did.
Agreed. And that really helps me with the transition here into one of our listener questions.
All right.
From @noobengineer. Who says, can Mr. Price convince me on his opinion of Akers? I have him in one league and I'm late on running back. Should I be selling while the iron is hot still? And then you also ask how us hosts feel about Akers, but I'll let you go first and then I'll chime in.
All right. So I have been, and this is probably why he's asking, you know, this question specifically, but I've been notoriously lower than consensus on Cam Akers. For the most part this year, that turned out pretty well. He had a couple nice games there at the end of the year, but overall, I don't think it was the season people were hoping for. And part of that was injury and, you know, starting slow and different things like that. But so going into this year, I think a lot of people have their sights set on, this is a guy that's going to get 20 to 25 carries a game. This is a guy that's just going to be an absolute beast. And is there a ceiling where that does happen? Absolutely. But we're looking at most of the games where he feasted were against bottom tier defenses, specifically against the run. And on top of that, this offensive line is not a great offensive line, and it's only getting older with guys like Wentworth. I don't know how much longer he's going to be able to be around. There's some bad habits that Akers has picked up. So if you want to tell me that he ends up being, you know, RB 10 this year to 16, sure, I'm fine with that. But I think people have just gotten way too high, and they're doing similar to what they did the season before with Miles Sanders, where they're just ready to crown him without thinking about the entire context of everything that was going on there. And I think we're getting into a similar waters now. that's flipped for me on Sanders this year. I think he's become a value, and now I'm interested in him. So it's kind of about – it's all about the perspective of where people are looking at him, how high, how low they have him. But, you know, we talked about it on the Nerds Pod where, you know, we have him behind most of the names in this rookie running back class right now. You know, we have him obviously behind Jonathan Taylor, Dobbins, Swift. We have him behind Antonio Gibson. CEH, I think, is close. I think those two are somewhat interchangeable.
I think Rich would definitely have him above CEH.
Well, I don't know. He loves him some CEH. So.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I'm sorry. I meant to say that's what I'm saying. I meant to say he would definitely have him above Akers. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. So I think people got a little bit bent out of shape about our feelings on Akers. I don't think he's a bad running back or anything like that. I just don't think. As far as his mental approach to the game compared to some of the other running backs and his decision-making while on the field, I just don't think it's as strong. Combine that with a weaker offensive line. I don't know. I do think this is a boost in value for him, though. So I do think that would bump him up a couple spots with Stafford coming to town.
I agree. I definitely think it's a boost in value for him. I was probably a little higher on him than you were coming into the season. As you said, it didn't pan out well for a lot of this season. But we did see him pop off at the end there. But I definitely agree. The offensive line is a concern. I think you said, I think you mentioned Whitworth. I'm not even sure if he's coming back. Yeah, he's very old. But I do like him. I would probably put him above Gibson, but probably behind all the other guys you said. And I think he's probably – where do you think he's valued at this point in terms of trades? Because, you know, we always like to talk trade value on
Absolutely.
Here. I would probably put him at a late first, maybe 109-ish. What do you think?
Are we talking super flex or one QB?
Super flex. We generally always talk super flex
okay.
on here.
All right. Nope. I like that. I prefer super flex leagues.
Yes.
I actually think most people will have him higher because I think a lot of people right now would take him right at or above any of the running backs in this class. So I think we're talking probably more closer to like a mid is where most people would probably have him, if I had to guess.
You think people are putting him above all the running backs, including Najee?
I don't know about all, but I think he's going to be right in that same conversation as Najee and ETN. I think he's going to be right in there, which I anticipate in super flex leagues, those guys go in somewhere between 104 and 107.
Right. Yeah. And that makes sense. I guess maybe I'm just a little more enamored with those receivers than the community is at large.
You know how those running backs get come draft time. They always
exactly. get pushed up. Okay, so what about the Goff end of this? Like, how do you see this? They're saying Detroit wanted Goff. I don't know if that's true. Or
I think you have to say that if you're Detroit. I don't think you can be like, yeah, we don't really like this guy, but we got a bunch of picks, so what are you going to do?
I'm curious. I'm sorry. I was going to say, I'm curious to see how it plays out on that end. Do you think he's going to be the season-long starter? Do you think they draft a guy at 7 or –
I think there's a very real possibility they draft a guy, and especially with the additional draft capital that they've gained, I wouldn't be shocked at all to see them, you know, maybe move up to get their guy, because chances are at 7, you know, you're hoping that, you know, Wilson or Lance or somebody like that falls to you. Whereas, you know, I could see them moving up if it's true that the Jets aren't looking to take a quarterback at 2 and they want to ride with Darnold for another year. Move up to 2, and then you get your choice of everybody except for Trevor Lawrence. I could see them potentially doing something like that. I'm even not going to rule out the possibility of them trading Goff to a team like, you know, Washington or Indianapolis, you know, a team that could really use a quarterback for this season that is a solid player. So I'm interested to see how it all plays out. But I think the most likely scenario in all of this is that Jared Goff is the starter. They're just going to eat that money because at this point, they're not looking to win. Who cares where they're at salary cap wise? I think that's probably the most likely scenario. I'm just not ruling out any of those other possibilities.
Yeah, that's my thinking too. They signed Campbell to a 6-year deal as head coach, and they are clearly going into a big rebuild here. So I think I could even see, like you said, I could see them riding him out for this year and then figuring they're going to be horrible and getting their quarterback next year, even if they don't trade up, like you said, because it's not impossible. There could be 3 guys gone if they just stay at 7. So
absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. And Russ put a couple other news items on here. I'm not sure exactly where he was going to go with them, but I'll just go where I'm going to go with them. So Washington and Carolina also went after Stafford is one of the news items he put on here. Do you think Teddy makes it through the season?
It's a great question. I do think there's a real possibility at eight that Carolina.
Yeah, they could also. Somebody.
I think that's a real possibility. But I think that they look at their weapons offensively and think that that's an offense that can win now. I don't know that they're going to find a quarterback in the draft at eight that is going to be better for this season, for right now, than Teddy Bridgewater will. So really, it would have to be – and I actually think – that Carolina is a real dark horse to get Deshaun Watson. I put a video out a little while ago about, you know, they do have some possible capital that they could move in order to get him. They're in decent cap space as well. And on top of all that, remember Teddy played at Clemson. He has to approve this deal. I don't think he would mind going to the Carolinas. I think that's something that he would enjoy doing, going back to his old stomping grounds where he was king. So I think that's a dark horse candidate there for Deshaun.
I'm curious. I didn't see what you put out. What do you think that they could possibly move that would get Watson? I've heard the Carolina, the rumors in general on Twitter and stuff, but I haven't really seen a concrete kind of package that they could put together.
So I think what they would probably have to do is they would have to move Teddy Bridgewater, who's got a fairly friendly contract and could be a fine bridge quarterback for Houston to get him through the next year or two until they finally get draft capital back again. And I would, my guess is they would also have to trade the 108 this season. They would have to trade their first the following year and probably an additional second and or third on top of that. So I think you're giving Teddy two firsts, with one of them being the 108. And then you're also giving up, you know, a second and a third between the next 2 years.
Yeah, I could see that. Although I guess a lot of people are saying if Stafford's worth Goff and two firsts, how many? Then it makes Watson worth like five firsts or something like that.
Yeah, I think part of that was the contract that they had to take on with Goff. I think that had part of the play there.
And then Washington, that's another interesting one. What do you think? Are they just going to sign a free agent? I'm not sure where they go at quarterback. They're probably drafting too low to get anybody of note. So, right. and they would have to trade up massively to get in the range that they could get somebody. Stafford, I thought, actually would have made a lot of sense for them if they could work it out, because they have a lot of the other pieces in place right now with that defense. So, do you think they just get some second tier guy in the free agent market?
I don't know that they have a lot of other options right now, unless they can somehow pry, you know, Carson Wentz out from Philly, which I don't think is going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, chances are their best case scenario is probably just to roll with Alex Smith, which seems crazy, but really the only other guys even on the free agent market that would be available that would even be comparable would be, you know, Jameis Winston, and he doesn't have necessarily a reliable track record. I think they just want to win with running the football and defense. So sorry about that.
No problem, Garrett.
I felt it coming on.
You got to sneeze. You got to sneeze.
Yeah. Sorry about that. But I think at this point, I just don't know that there's going to be a better option. So chances are, I think they're sitting pat there with Alex Smith. They could maybe try to trade up for a Mac Jones. That would be the only one that I could even see as a reasonable possibility.
Yeah, that's somewhat disappointing. I mean, we'd love to see Terry McLaurin and Logan Thomas get a real quarterback there. Yeah. I guess it could really help J.D. McKissick again next year, though, if Alex Smith is still the quarterback.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the last one was another quarterback issue, which I hadn't even heard this, but that Denver is going hard after Kirk Cousins, which I found really interesting when I saw Russ put that on here.
I didn't know about Denver. I heard about the 49ers going after him. I hadn't heard about Denver.
Do you think Minnesota would? I don't think Minnesota would want to move Cousins. I don't see why that would happen.
The only reason I would even think they would consider it is, you know, after this season didn't go the way that they thought, they're not necessarily in the same class as Green Bay. If they're thinking about, you know, potentially rebuilding around Justin Jefferson, maybe starting that a little bit early, trying to get some draft capital. But I don't know. I think they have enough to at least make a run. They're going to get their defense healthier again, which will keep them in games more. But
right.
Yeah, I would think it would have to be a pretty good offer in order for Minnesota to be willing to part ways with Kirk Cousins.
And again, going on the other side of that, Drew Lock, that was the whole quarterback situation in the NFL this year is going to be very interesting.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. There's like, I think we mentioned it last week on the show that Schefter put out a tweet that he thought 18 quarterbacks could be in flux.
Wow.
Yeah. Which I think we all thought was a little high, but still there's so many that could be traded or signed or whatever. And I Locke was a guy that I was erroneously a little high on based on the surrounding talent. I've learned my lesson there.
Sure.
That's another situation I wanted to ask you about. Do you think Locke survives the quarterback carousel this year? I kind of think despite what Russ put on here, a lot of the indications I seem to see seems to think that they might want to give him one more year. But where are you at with Locke?
It's tough anytime you have a new GM. They want to make their mark and you know, put their stamp on the team. I think if there's a guy that they like at 109, I don't think they're going to hesitate to pull the trigger. The hard part is I just don't know if they do, you know, if Zach Wilson ends up being there, if Trey Lance ends up being there, or even if they love Mac Jones. You know, if any of those guys are there, would they pull the trigger to do it? I think they would. I just don't know how they feel about those players. Versus a guy like Drew Locke. So it's a very up in the air. I wouldn't necessarily be targeting him in any drafts right now. That's for sure.
Definitely. Do you think he has, is what we saw this year basically what we can expect from Locke going forward? Do you think as a guy who probably was scouting him coming out?
Yeah. Yeah. I was never a huge Drew Locke guy. We had a big discussion on it on the Dynasty Nerds podcast on Drew Locke coming into the season. And Matt and I were very a little skeptical on him. Rich was on board. Obviously, we know that didn't work out. But who knows what could happen. I mean, he could turn it around. But there's just a lot of indicators to me that I just don't think he's the guy. They had a lot of weapons there. And I know some of them got injured and things like that. But I just don't know that he's the guy there. So I think they need to get at least a professional, you know, quarterback, mediocre guy that can get them through until they have all the other pieces in place and then maybe go after their quarterback. But it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out.
And then one more thing before we move on from the quarterbacks, we've been kind of mentioning it as we bring up each of these situations is all the rookies. I think we all agree Lance, Wilson and Fields are definitely going in the first round. Mm-hmm. You think Lance and Mac Jones are also definitely first rounders?
I do at this point. It's tough with Lance just because there's such limited tape on him. But coming into this year, even very well respected analysts like Daniel Jeremiah was, you know, putting him in the same breath as Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. And so anytime you can get somebody that's that well respected, that thinks that highly, I think the rest of the draft community just has to accept it, whether they like it or not. He's more than likely going to be a first rounder unless something comes out or some big news breaks on him or anything like that. I think he's going to be a first rounder. Mac Jones was kind of up in the air for me until I got a chance to see him this past week at the Senior Bowl. He looked really, really solid. I get it. It's, you know, it's practices. It's not necessarily, you know, you shouldn't necessarily hang your hat on it too much, but he just looked so much better, so much more efficient than all of the other guys there that I just don't see in a league where there are so many teams that still need quarterbacks. I don't know how he gets out of the first round.
Yeah, I agree. And then do you think, is there a sixth guy that can sneak in or no? You think it's probably those five and that's it?
The only one at this point that I could realistically see even having a chance would be Kyle Trask out of Florida.
Yeah, that's the name I've heard.
At this point, I don't think that's going to happen. I think he's probably going to be a second rounder, you know, a little bit more of a project. But I'll be honest, I really liked his tape this year. The hard part was he got that last game of the season against Oklahoma where Kyle Pitts sat out and Kadarius Toney sat out and all these guys sat out. You know, he tried to be a soldier, tried to fight through and play in the bowl game. And he threw, you know, what was it, three or four interceptions. It was mm-hmm. just, it was really, really bad. I think that really hurt his draft stock. I think that left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouth. So this is somebody that I do think could, you know, rebound and become a value later on. So he's actually a guy I'm interested in my super flex drafts.
Okay. Name to note down. I'm writing down Kyle Trask. I just, as you were talking, one more question occurred to me there was, do you think there is five spots that these guys could actually start, or is it or are we just going to see in terms of guys in your rookie drafts that you actually think will start this year? I think everyone thinks Lawrence, Wilson, and probably Fields all get to teams that they get to start at some point this year on. Do you think Lance and Jones, is there enough spots that they could even get somewhere that they'll start this year?
Yeah, I could see Trey Lance ending up with a team like Denver and at least competing from day one with Drew Lock for that job. I could see him going to – trying to think of what other teams are right in that range. Oakland would be an interesting one. I don't necessarily – I think they're okay with Derek Carr. I don't think they're going to move on from him. But two other teams, even if those guys fall, that could easily – they either one of those guys could start on is with New England at 15, and then we already mentioned the Washington football team at 20. So – or what are they, 19? They're 19. Chicago's 20, which could be another team.
Yeah, that's another one, yeah. Problem.
So I do think there's enough landing spots. It's, you know, where are they positioned at in the draft? Will they take those guys? That's the big question, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And like we said, there's so many spots in flux. I guess it does make sense that we definitely could see five rookie starting quarterbacks if that's the way those teams decide to go.
Sure. Yep.
Yep. So we'll move on now from all that quarterback talk and get into our main event, which it was inspired by a tweet I saw a couple weeks ago about selling Travis Kelce because he's at peak value. And it touched on a lot of kind of hot button points for me, which this whole selling at peak value thing, I get it. I know we want to sell high. Sell high and buy low and all that good stuff. But I often think we try too much to do this and miss out on potential years of production. Like in this specific case, I think Kelce is going to give us multiple tight end one seat. He might not be the tight end one like he has been for the last 5 years. But I definitely think he could be top six for another 2 to 3 years with Mahomes and Andy Reid. And it also kind of touches on the whole ageism thing, which is very prevalent in the Twitter dynasty community.
Sure.
And the overvaluation of youth. So I'm kind of wondering where you're at. I'm selling guys lately. Like I've heard this about and I guess it might have worked this year, but I've heard people before 2020, you know, saying, you know, should sell Christian McCaffrey because he's never going to be higher than he is now. And I get that point, but I think people often overvalue the production you can still get from these guys. They undervalue, I'm sorry, the production you can get from these guys in terms of just trying to do that. Sell high. I want to sell him at his peak value. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that because it's something I'm much more of a production based player than a value based player. I mean, obviously I value value, so to speak.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
But I'm one of the least ageist dynasty players you're going to see. And I love getting those kind of guys, like a guy like we talked about earlier, like Robert Woods. I love getting a guy like that people are going to undervalue. Yeah. They have undervalued basically ever since he became a Ram. But anyway,
that's true.
What do you think about that whole selling elite guys, whether they're older or not, but that's particularly in this instance with the Kelce thing. He's 31. So what's your thoughts on that?
So I think you have to take team context into account big time here. If I am a contender – and I'm a legitimate contender, I have zero desire to trade away Kelce's, to trade away Brady's, to trade away, whoever it is, you know, these older veterans that we still think have a year or two of being the top guy or one of the top guys at their position. I have zero desire to do it. Now, if I'm middle of the road, and I think that's where you have to really be honest with yourself as a dynasty owner, because I think sometimes people think they're a legit contender when in reality they need crazy luck to be able to compete with some of these other teams. So If you're a middle of the road team, though, I'm absolutely going to consider trading some of these guys like a Travis Kelce, where we just don't know when the wall will hit. Could it be, you know, this season? It absolutely could be this season, and you've lost all value in him. Could it be 3 years from now? Maybe. And that sucks that you missed out on that. But if I'm a middle of the road, I need to make sure that I'm getting guaranteed value in production and players, as opposed to taking that risk, because this guy's probably not going to put me over the top to win it this year anyway. So I need to keep, accumulating value. And then obviously if you're a rebuild, that's an easy one.
But. Right. Yeah. If you're rebuilding, that definitely makes sense. But yeah, if you're even if you're middle of the road, I don't hate holding on to Kelce. I think you're still getting multiple years of high end production out of him. I can see using it to build up the rest of your roster, but I hate the idea of just a blanket statement of selling these guys because they're at peak value. And what do you think about the whole age thing in general? Like the way over this last season. It came out, everyone was kind of going on board with DK Metcalf as wide receiver one, which I think a lot of it was just based on the fact that he's doing this in his second year. Obviously, he's very good. I like DK Metcalf. I'm not saying I don't. But I thought that was a little I still think it's premature now that we've gotten through the season. Do you think youth is overvalued too much, or are you kind of on board with that way of thinking that DK should be the wide receiver one and you know, maybe CeeDee Lamb's in the top 6, 8, whatever, something like that, even though he hasn't done it yet. Where do you fall on that?
So this one, I'm going to say it's a little bit positional for me. So if I am looking at wide receivers like we're touching on here, then I am much more so on the side of, you know, I need to see it before I can put them anywhere near my top spot. So the only wide receiver that is like, you know, the wide receivers that I would consider like youth guys right now that I would even consider towards number one would be AJ Brown and Justin Jefferson, because I've seen them do it as rookies. And so you get the added bonus of them being super young. So those would be the only ones I would even consider. But still at this point, I still can't put them over Tyreek. I still can't put them over Davante Adams. Those kind of guys, I still can't do it.
No, yeah, and even AJ Brown, I mean, he hasn't had that high end one season yet. Even
true, yeah, he ended up being wide receiver 12 this year, despite
missing, he did miss some games, yeah,
you know, a few games. So that for me was enough to boost it. But yeah, I get your point for sure. now, when it comes to running back, I think it's a very different story because we know how short that window is, and so. You know, if you want to say that you would consider Jonathan Taylor right up there with those top backs, I get it. You know, yeah, we might have only seen it for 6 or 7 games, but most of these running backs aren't lasting 8, 9, 10 years. Most of them are lasting, you know, 4, 5, 6 years. So anytime they're getting into that 4, 5, 6 year range, it makes it a lot more difficult to justify a startup pick of taking them, you know, as the top player overall or something like that, as opposed to leaning on more of the youth. So, you know, guys like Dobbins and Swift and Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah, I think this is a great point about the positional thing. And I agree with you. I have Taylor way up there in my rankings. I don't know exactly where I'd put him, but it's definitely top 5, I would think. Where do you fall? Like, I'm interested on quarterbacks, because I know a lot of people are talking about Lawrence as a potential first-round startup pick.
Well, I can tell you right now, I'm actually in the middle of a startup. So I was actually checking on that because I got a couple like offers for my spot. I'm on the clock. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. Like while this came on and a bunch of people are offering me, but in the first round, not just in the first round, but you know, we're allowing rookie picks inside mm-hmm. there. And Trevor Lawrence just went, let me look. I know he went inside the first round. I can tell you exactly where, he just went. Let me scroll up. He went at pick 110, is right. Where he went. And this is a 14 team league. So quarterbacks that were still on the board, I was picking at 112. So I picked Justin Herbert there at 112. Burrow went at 113.
So what do you think? Is that you said something that kind of piqued my interest, because that's something I say a lot, is I like to see it before I elevate these guys. And I know Lawrence is one of the best QB prospects we've ever seen and all that. Are you picking him that high? Or would you have Herbert over him? Would you have Burrow over him? Where do you fall with that?
I'm probably still taking Herbert and Burrow over him. The reason being is I'm on board with Trevor Lawrence, and I don't think it's a terrible pick. However, for me, when we're talking about the first, second, and even third round in a startup, those are foundational pieces to your team. You can't miss on those guys. You have to hit, or else you're going to be setting your team back a lot. So for me, I'm playing it very safe, typically within the first 2 to 3 rounds. After that, I'm gambling everywhere I can. You know, I'm looking for upside. I'm looking, you know, I'm taking risks on players. No problem with that, because part of it is you do have to gamble on upside at times. You can't just play it safe and expect to win. Like, there are players that you're going to have to, you know, wheel and deal and be a little risky with. But I don't like to do that with my foundational pieces. I need to make sure those hit.
Yeah, and that's exactly where I'm at. I always like to take the guys I know can do it over. I was on another podcast back in December. We were talking about rookie picks, and I almost always miss out on the first round rookie picks and startups, because they always seem to be overvalued. They're taken way before I would ever consider taking them, because I'm gobbling up the value in other places. I'm taking, you know, like we talked about, the vets. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously I like youth, and in the first round you can usually get youth, but as we get further and further, I love like a guy like, I think Nuke is going in close to the third in super flex startups. I would take that all day. So I'm with you totally there. And what do you think too? I'm curious now, because we're talking about it, even though this is kind of going off topic, with super flex. What I've been seeing in both the DLF mocks and just startups, I haven't done any startups, but just ones I've heard about, is quarterbacks are now going even more crazier than they ever have before. Like, you're seeing like 8, 9 quarterbacks in the first round.
Yep.
12, 14.
That's what we had in this one. Yep. We had, this is a 14 team league. We've had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah. We had 8 go in the first round of a 14-team league. Well, actually 9, because that startup pick, assuming that would be Trevor Lawrence. So yeah. So 9 in the first 14 picks were quarterbacks. So, and that was also 6 of the first 7. So,
and people who've listened to me know, I'm a guy who generally likes to wait a little longer for quarterback. I don't wait too long. I like to more grab guys in that 12 to 20 range and get multiple guys there and just kind of play the matchups and pick up the value at some of the other positions. But what do you think? Do you think that's warranted at this point? I know a lot of people are saying the way a lot of the elite, especially the Konami code, you know, quarterbacks with the running ability, need to be drafted that early, but I still think it's going a little overboard. Do you agree with that, or are you on board with drafting 9, 8, 9 quarterbacks in Superflex in the first round? What do you think?
For Dynasty, I'm on board with it. I'm usually walking away with a quarterback, at least one in the first 2 rounds, in startups. And part of it just is just for the length of time that you can have those guys. You know, it's tough to, you know, let's talk about, you know, Dalvin Cook. Dalvin Cook's a great player. Do I think in 3 years Dalvin Cook's still going to be worth a top, you know, 12 pick? Probably not. You know, and so I think that's the biggest thing around it, is just the longevity of the position. And then you're starting 2 of them as well. So I think for me, and I get it if you want to say like, well, I wouldn't take him. I would take, you know, Justin Jefferson, or I would take Tyreek Hill, or, you know, whoever. That's, I'm fine with that. And I don't think that's a bad approach. But for me, especially in 12, and this one's actually a 14-team league. Right. So we're talking about 14-team league, super flex. That means just for every team to have 2, that's 28 quarterbacks. So you're running out quick.
Yeah, and I agree. On the 14 team, it does make them even more valuable, and I tend to draft a little earlier there. I guess I was thinking more the standard 12 team kind of thing. Sure. I'm definitely much more comfortable waiting a little bit longer.
24, I mean, they still go pretty quick.
Yeah, and my thinking is just that I'll figure out the next Ben Roethlisberger or some Tom Brady who will finish as a quarterback one and. You know, Trade Addicts podcast. I'll trade for the next guy that's going to do that, and I'll figure it out in a year.
Strategy at all. I don't mind that. You know, if you just keep going from, you know, 35 plus year old quarterback to 35 plus year old quarterback, you know, in 2 years, trade for Matt Stafford. And, you know, 2 years after that, trade for, you know, Russell Wilson. And, you know, that kind of philosophy, I have no problem with that.
Yep. So yeah, that's where I generally fall, but pretty good discussion on all that stuff, the youth and the ageism and all that. I think that finishes that up. So we'll get into, we have a couple other listener questions people had for you. Some guy at J Mike Check. J Mike, we love you.
I love J Mike. He's the man.
He asks, whether it be player types, profiles, landing spots, process, what mistakes did you make in rookie drafts last year that you're looking to avoid this year? Better yet, what improvements have you made to your process? And then he says, that's a lot of questions. I'll hang up and listen now.
No, that's a great question. J Mike's always super insightful. So one of the things that I am making sure that I'm sticking to is sticking to the process, because what's easy to happen is to look at results over top of the process. And I think you always have to stick with the process over the results. You know, there are going to be times where you did all the homework you possibly could on a player. You know, all the background checking, all the tape watching, all the analytics, and everything matches up. And for whatever reason, that player still misses. It's going to happen. These guys are human. None of these guys are 100% guaranteed to hit. So I think one thing is not overreacting to a bad play here or, you know, the wrong guy there or different things like that. You know, another thing is patience. I think sometimes we get so quick to determine in the first 5 weeks whether a rookie is good or a rookie sucks.
Yeah.
And, you know, it takes some of these guys a little more time than 5 weeks to, you know, determine whether or not they're a stud or a dud. And I think Jonathan Taylor was a great case of that this past season where, you know, first 10 weeks were looking bad. I mean, it was looking really bad.
Yeah.
And then for the entire end of the season into the fantasy playoffs, he was a game changer. He was a world beater for fantasy football teams. So I think we do have to be patient, allow the process to work through. And then the big thing is then going up this time of year and reevaluating my process from last year. And so going through all the nuances of, okay, why did I like this player? What were the traits that I saw? What were the reasonings that I picked this guy over this guy? And just making sure that I'm understanding and I'm not missing something in my process. Cause if I'm going to stick with process over results, I better make sure my process is pretty solid. And so making sure at the end of the season that you're going back through your process and saying, okay, you know, let me check for any holes that I might have there. So I think those are the big things for me.
Yeah. And a lot of my process is listening to guys like you and J Mike and Ray GQ and all those guys. Cause I've recently in the last couple of years started, especially with the help of the Dynasty Nerds film room plug there, to try and look at some of these guys more than I ever had before. Yeah. But I'm still no expert at it. So I depend a lot on you guys. And I appreciate that.
Sure, man.
Yeah. And, but one thing I did want to touch on too is that, I still think that we tend to put too much on how much do you weigh landing spot in your process? Cause I do still think every year, I think we say, you know, we can't overvalue landing spot. AJ Brown, we can't overvalue landing spot too much. And then CEH, who's almost everybody's RBs 4 or 5, goes to Kansas City and he becomes the RB 1 or 2 for everybody.
Yeah.
So, how much do you factor in landing spots to your process?
Yeah. So I really try hard to not let it let it value, you know, change the value much. If it's a spot or two, you know, I'm cool with that. You know, some of the biggest, you know, risers and fallers, like, you know, Jonathan Taylor went from 3-1 for me. Dobbins went from 1-3, you know, so like those were like the two biggest movers, you know, was two spots. Mm-hmm. So I think it's definitely, heavy on the player over landing spot, because landing spots changed just so the situation's changed so quickly. There's so many different factors that you can predict and so many that you just can't predict. So I think you're never going to, I don't think it's ever a bad process to just say, you know what, screw landing spots altogether, and I'm going to stick with my best players. That's being overdramatic. You obviously have to take in the entire picture. But that needs to be the basis of where you have these guys.
And I almost think that might work out better for people if you actually, I mean, even though you're going to miss some then because of maybe some landing spot stuff. But I especially in not necessarily, you know, people doing pot, but the community in general, I think, like I said, like I'm curious, where did you have CEH pre and post draft? Did you move him much or?
He went from,
do you remember?
He went from 4-2. Okay, so he also moved two spots.
Yeah. So, and I think a lot of people made him the one after.
That was one of our biggest offseason debates at the Nerds was Jonathan Taylor versus CEH. And I was alone on that hill, but.
And I was with you.
Right, I appreciate it.
And we both, I think, came out on top on that discussion. Okay, so we'll get to the last listener question here. And it's from at Andrew Hall FF. When evaluating rookies pre-drafts, do you look at them in tiers for rookie pick trading? For example, if you have six players in your top tier in Superflex leagues, are you targeting pick 106 in specific trades, or do you wait until after the NFL draft to do that? And he says, I ask because the closer we get to the NFL draft, the more expensive rookie picks are. So targeting them now is easier than waiting, but it also includes some risk of good players going to bad spots and moving tiers. So yeah, I'm very curious to what you think about this as well.
So I think this is great coupled in with our last discussion, because I'm fine moving players, you know, spots, but I'm really not looking to change tiers. Like, I think players on ability should remain in the same tier. So I would definitely align with your first part. If you think that there's six guys in the first tier, chances are they shouldn't really be shifting tiers. I guess maybe if you want to argue like he was the last guy in this tier, now he's the top guy of that tier, I guess you can make that argument, but they really shouldn't be moving a ton. So I would much rather trust my process and be taking, you know, if I think there's six guys, I'm looking for maybe not necessarily only six, but, you know, picks 4-6 there. So I make sure that I get inside that tier of players that I really like.
Yeah. And like you said, I think that ties in perfectly to what we were saying. I just think, yeah, you look at the best talent and base your tiers on that. And if you're going to trade now rather than waiting before the draft until around draft time, yeah, I mean, if you think it's Lawrence, you know, Fields, ATN, Harris, Chase and Smith, then yeah, make sure you get one of those top six picks and don't get 7 or 8.
Right.
I'm trying to find it because I know there was one other question here that was not on the sheet and I'm having trouble finding it. Bear with me 1 second.
All right, good.
Sorry to any listeners out there. The question. And I cannot find the question. I know what it was. It was, I still can't find it on Twitter, but, it was about, tight end premium. So this is totally unrookie related, like all these other questions were, tight end premium. At what point does that become, more of a determining factor for beyond the elite guys and really boosting them up? Like Trade Addicts, Russ runs 8 Trade Addicts leagues and they are all 1.75 tight end premium. Okay. I know there's a lot of leagues out there that are 2.0 tight end premium and obviously sort of quote unquote standard is probably 1.5 tight end premium. So where do you fall where you start valuing those guys as more like the guys after Kelce and Waller and Andrews and Kittle as viable flexes, and that you're actually going to vault them up your board to a more, you know, substantial point.
Yeah. I mean, there are times that I'm starting, you know, guys that are the tier below that. So, you know, the Hockenson's and the, of course, Jonnu Smith was in that for a while. He had a weird season, but, you know, different guys like that, like I have no problem flexing them other times, you know, even just with a 1.5 premium. But yeah, once you get to the point where you're at two, all of a sudden that really is a big jump, because if it's a 2 point per catch premium, I mean, just four catches on the day, which is not special in any way, you know, you get four catches, there's 8 points right there. So even if they only got 20 yards, which would be a pretty lame day for a tight end, you've got double digit points right there.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, any truly starting tight end in a 2 point per catch league is almost guaranteed double digit points, unless they just have one of those, you know, terrible games where it's one catch for 9 yards, you know, and that happens. But at that point, you know, it's going to be tough to find many flexes that you can trust week in and week out to get you 10 points.
Yeah. And that's, I kind of think where the trade ice leagues are is probably, I think right there is where I start value. 1.75, I think, does make enough of a difference even, to start valuing them as viable flexes over, you know, lower tier receivers, lower tier running backs. So I do think the regular sort of 1.5 tight end premium often isn't enough and more just, props up the elite guys even more. But I start to think that, especially like you said, 2.0 is easily, I'm starting to think about tight ends over other positions. Definitely. So, good discussion there. And we will, I guess, move on to our trade addicts trades. I think we've gotten through everything else. So,
all right.
Got a couple of trades here. Again, as everybody knows, Trade Addicts leagues are 12-team Superflex tight end premium 1.75 with 0.05 for return yards. And these are both from TA5. The first one is Devin Singletary, Zach Ertz, and a fourth for Jonnu Smith and 301. I'm not sure where the fourth is. I don't know if that's a future fourth. It doesn't say on here. But what do you think about that one?
It's kind of a gross trade.
Yeah.
Which sounds mean.
A lot of guys nobody really wants.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a fairly even trade. So Devin Singletary, I do think, is going to be a part of that offense no matter what happens. But I truly would not be shocked at all to see Buffalo try again to get that back. You know, we really kind of saw that they were missing that this season, just that running back that they could rely on. Their defense is good. You know, I think they're going to invest in the defense more, but really in the offense, there's really no other holes except for they just aren't getting enough production out of their running back. So, you know, you're kind of playing with a little bit of risk there. We don't know what's going to happen with Ertz. Is he washed? I don't know. And then the fourth, Jonnu Smith. I actually do really like Jonnu Smith, but at this point, we don't know where he's going. No. He's a free agent too. And the 301. So if I had to pick, I'm leaning towards Jonnu in the 301, just because I've never been the biggest Devin Singletary guy. But I mean, it's like a, you know, if I'm putting percentage on, it's like 51-49. I think it's a very even trade.
Yeah, we're very much in sync on this one. It's kind of a whatever trade, as we said at the beginning. But I think of all the guys, I think Jonnu has the highest ceiling of all those players. So, and you got the 301 there, which, you know, isn't a major thing, but it's higher than the
pick. In a super flex draft, you know, with the tight end premium and all that, it pushes down some good guys to get at the beginning of the third. So,
and, you kind of alluded to it, but, since we're talking about it, Zach Ertz, do you think he is what? I kind of don't think I kind of think it was a product of the offense and the disaster that was the Philadelphia Eagles this
year.
Sure. And I am an Eagles fan, so I had front row seat to that disaster. But do you what do you think of him as a buy low? Are you just staying away from Zach Ertz, or do you? I as an Eagles fan, I can tell you, I think everyone thinks he's gone this year, and I think a lot of people realize that.
I think he's gone, but I don't. The best answer for that is I truly don't know, which sounds bad, you know. but I truly don't know if he is or not. He's at the age where he could be. You know, we could see that drop in production, but it could easily have just been, you know, the dumpster fire that was that offense this year. It's, you know, both are very real possibilities. And the other part of it is it's going to depend on where it lands. So I'm going to start up, you know, I mentioned the startup before. I'm going to start up right now. If it gets to a point where, you know, most of the, you know, main starters are gone and he's on the board, I would have no problem taking him, but I'm going into that knowing that, you know, could he end up being tight end 5 on the season? Sure. Could he end up being tight end 25 on the season? Sure. I really don't know. And so you're just kind of playing the odds there with that one.
What's the highest you would pay for Zach Ertz in a tight end premium? I'm probably thinking late second, 209-ish maybe.
Yeah, we're probably on the same board. That's the absolute earliest I'd even start to consider it. And I would have to be a true contender to consider it.
Yeah, I agree. There's definite upside there, but yeah, he's going to be going in his age 30 season. So he definitely could be done too, but a lot of will probably maybe depend on which team he goes to. So sure. I guess we'll see this offseason what happens. And the other trade here is a lot going on here. Matt Stafford, again, this is Superflex. Matt Stafford, Nick Chubb, Chris Godwin, 207 for Antonio Gibson, Jalen Reagor, the 101 and 401.
Yeah, so it's Trevor Lawrence is the big moving piece for the bottom there.
Right.
So it's basically Stafford, Chubb, and Chris Godwin for, you know, and we'll remove the picks for a second there. But it's basically Stafford, Chubb, Godwin for Lawrence, Gibson, and Reagor. For me, the only way I would even consider taking the bottom over the top there is if I'm in full rebuild mode. That's the only way I'm taking the bottom over the top. Every other such, even middle of the road, I'm taking top. I get it. I like Lawrence too. I mentioned it before. I would be open to taking him that early. There's a lot of players I want more and I don't want to take the risk and that kind of stuff, but I understand the thought process. But right now we have Matt Stafford, who's a top, you know, right around top 12 guy, that is going to still be giving you probably at least 4 or 5 more good seasons. Nick Chubb, who is a top 6 or 7 running back for fantasy football purposes. Chris Godwin, a guy we really like. We're not sure where he'll be this year, but another guy that's right around that wide receiver 1 range. And then you get the better pick as an added bonus in there. And, you know, the 207 could be a nice pick. I like Gibson. You know, I like T-Law. I think both good players. But at this point, I just don't think that the gap there is enough to cover. So I'm taking the top.
And I'm again on board with you on which side I would take here. And I think even other than the Stafford part, even in a rebuild, I mean, Chubb is third year, fourth year.
This will be his fourth season. He is a little bit on the older side. So I think he's turning 26, I believe.
Okay. He's a little older than I thought then. I was going to say, I still don't even hate that side with the 207 and Godwin and Chubb. But Chubb's a little older, but like you said, unless I'm in just total full rebuild, I would rather have that side. And I don't think I'm from our talk tonight. I think I'm quite as high on Gibson as you are. I'm a little skeptical. I think a lot of his production this year is boosted up by playing the Cowboys twice. And I just have doubts that his touchdowns can keep up in that offense. Like we talked about, we're not even sure what they can do at quarterback. Sure. So, but he's definitely got some upside. But one more guy I wanted to ask you about before we finish up here, in one of these trades is, do you think Godwin, what do you see? Do you see his value? Do you think he stays in Tampa, and do you think it's better for him to stay in Tampa or to go maybe, obviously not knowing where he's going to go, but maybe as the number one guy somewhere else?
If I had to guess, I think Tampa Bay is going to do everything they can to keep him this year while Tom Brady's still in town. So even if they just have to franchise him for the year and figure out the money later, and then I think he's probably going elsewhere after the season. So I think you're getting one more year of him in Tampa, and then he'll go elsewhere next season. That would be my guess.
Okay, and do you think it's better for his value to stay in Tampa as long as he's healthy, or would you?
Yeah,
do you like him as a number one somewhere else, or do you think it works the way it is with him and Evans?
Yeah, I think it works well, and I think Evans is trending in the wrong direction. So if anything, you know, that could only be potential boost in value for him. So I prefer him there over the unknown of where he's going to go.
Right. Okay. I think I'm on board with you there too. I like Godwin in Tampa. A lot of, you know, he was disappointing this year, but a lot of that was injury.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
hand and all that. Yeah.
And with, like you said, Evans trending down, I definitely think we could see him as kind of the highest fantasy producer there next year, with Evans actually at least helping to pull some coverage away from Godwin to make him even better. So, yep. Good stuff. So, that's, as Russ would say, that's the end of our show sheet. So that's the end of our show. yep. And, so, before I finish up here with just some of our business, Garrett, why don't you again remind everybody who you are, what you do, and where they can find what you do?
Yeah. I'm on Twitter at Dynasty Price. Always talking, you know, talking prospects a lot, but just fantasy football in general. All of my work, though, can be found at Dynasty Nerds. We've got the podcast. We've got the GM tool. We've got the film room. Lots of stuff for you in the offseason to be able to do. One, just to occupy time while you miss football, but more importantly, to make you a better dynasty player and hopefully win some championships.
Okay, and let me get to – I just wanted to say, too, that Garrett is one of the nicest guys you're going to find in the dynasty community. So, yeah, if you ever have any questions, hit him up. I'm sure I'll respond to you quickly.
I tried to.
But, yeah, a lot of good interactions with Garrett, and I really appreciate you coming on.
Oh, absolutely, man. Always enjoy it.
And just again, for us, I'm at Dynasty FF Addict on Twitter. As you all know, Russ is at Dynasty Outhouse. You can follow the pod at Trade Addicts Pod, and make sure you're following and subscribing to the DAP Network at DAP _ Network on Twitter. We have the unfortunately, Russ didn't put the information on the show sheet tonight, but there is a store. It's something.storeenvy.com. I don't know it, so Russ is probably going to kill me for not knowing the web address. We have shirts and all kinds of merch for not only the Trade Addicts Pod, but all the DAP Network pods. Get Real with Casey Kasem, Fantasy Timeline. There's still Dynasty Junkie stuff on there, even though we're not doing pods anymore. And there's a whole bunch of other pods that Russ knows that I don't. I think Superflex Super Show is there and a bunch of others. Proceeds from all that go to the charity that one of us picks every couple months. Mine is the Asperger's Autism Network for the next couple months. So all proceeds go to there. And I think I did everything. Hopefully, Russ will probably tell me if I didn't. So, I want to again thank Eric for coming on, and Russ will probably kill me because this show only went an hour and 2 minutes or so, where usually we go like an hour and a half. So,
oh no,
he's like, yeah. We had Sigmund Bloom on last week, and he had to get off after an hour, and he's like, we can't have that. We got to talk for another half an hour. So Russ never does it an hour, but with only the two of us, I guess that's what happens. So
it happens.
It happens. Yeah. Okay. So thanks for coming on, Garrett, and good night.
All right. We'll see you.
Bye.